It's music from Selah, their song Hope of the Broken World. It's about 12 minutes now after 8 o'clock Central Time on our Broken Road Radio Monday morning, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark, a member of the board at creationmoments.com, a biochemist, and our weekly Monday visitor and a good friend of the station. Don, good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Dave.
Morning, Don.
Yeah, David's here too. We missed David for the first hour of the program. He was wrestling with technical difficulties, just as we suspected. Some of those techno gremlins floating around the newsroom today, but everything is copacetic now. We're back and ready to go. And Don, we're going to talk a little bit about something we tease you about here, because you know we've long talked on the air the last year about creation and evolution and science and faith and those issues. Don, being a biochemist, it's wonderful to get, you know, a true scientist perspective on all this stuff, especially one who's a believer. And Don, a young Earth creationist, and he's explained that many times and shown us some scientific evidence to support the case, scientific evidence that tends to get squelched out there in the mainstream. But today an article comes to our attention from the Natural Society group. NaturalSociety.com is their website. And in this article, Don, they're quoting a geneticist, a researcher from Stanford University, Dr. Gerald Crabtree, who seems to think we're getting dumber and dumber. And we tease you about your theory of devolution, but I'm wondering if maybe you don't have something going there.
Well, I think so. You know, he's he's pointing out that as our DNA mutates, some of the DNA that affects memory and cognitive ability is part of that mutation, and that overall, as society ages, as the human race ages, then we shouldn't have as much cognitive ability as we, you know, as our forefathers did, or as our great 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 grandfathers did. And it's interesting because one of the aspects of what he's describing is kind of admitting that we're having some negative effects on due to mutations. Now, it's due to the mutations that evolutionists say, well, you know, genes mutate, and that's how we evolve. It's like you can't have it both ways. But in this case, he's really supporting the concept that, our genes are mutating in a negative way, and that's affecting our cognitive ability.
Well, he's saying that out of all the thousands or a bazillion, I don't know how many genes we have, but we have a bunch of genes, and that over the eons of our existence, there were bound to have been some mutations that persisted. And he makes the point about modern-day society and survival of the fittest, which I thought was interesting. Of course, that goes right back to Darwin in his theory of evolution, that only the fittest survive. He's saying now the tables are turned because of modern medicine and modern society and culture and living standards, that even people with weak gene pools, with defects in their genes, survive. And society is not necessarily dominated anymore by those with the stronger gene pools, so that some of these defects that have developed over time can actually magnify themselves as we go through the generations.
Well, and I think, that particular argument is rather, I mean, yes, I would agree with him that we are keeping folks alive that wouldn't have ordinarily survived, especially in the Wild West or in very harsh conditions. We have hospitals and hospices and in-home nursing care that nowadays keeps folks and kids and alive that wouldn't have survived. So, you know, therefore, one could conclude that yes, the gene pool is degrading over time. Our gene pool, and so we shouldn't be as smart today as we were yesterday, mm-hmm. for example, or in yesteryear, I should say.
Now, he talked, too, about some of the environment. Well, now not so much Dr. Crabtree, but the author, Michael Barrett, of The Post, talking about some of the other things that we have talked about here in the past, things like genetically engineered foods maybe affecting our bodies and the quality of our topsoil. They throw in the matter of fluoride. That's something we've never addressed here. What you're thinking about fluoride in so many water systems around the country?
Well, that's another topic. Maybe
it's a hot button for a lot of folks. Yeah.
But so I mean, fluoride is not this substance that's only beneficial to our health. I mean, really, it's only beneficial to our teeth in small quantities. But by putting it in the drinking water, study after study after study has shown that this is affecting mental abilities in children that have been exposed to this. Now, you know, we have all been exposed to this, so it's probably affecting, you know, our mental abilities too. Fluoride has been in the water system, and there's been communities that have banned fluoride in the water system because of these studies that have been done.
Of course, years ago, that was a huge, very controversial thing, and there were whole organizations that welled up around the country fighting the addition of fluoride to water systems. Up here in our neck of the woods, lots of many of us are on wells that were not really exposed to that. But in city water systems, certainly, if you've lived in a city for any length of time, you're likely to have imbibed quite an amount of fluoride over the years and in the decades. Other factors, we talked about genetic engineering, pesticides, another factor. So many we're surrounded by, and not just pesticides per se, but the chemicals we surround ourselves with. What part do you suppose that plays?
Well, certainly some of these pesticides are neurotoxins, and so they're going to play a role in dumbing us down as well, especially as generations go on and on. And it's not only the pesticides that we use, you know, let's say around our house to kill the insecticides and the pesticides that we use to kill, you know, the animals, the insects,
ants and mice and rats, yeah, all the pests.
Yeah, no, but it's also in around the agricultural products. In particular, that tons and tons of pesticides and herbicides are being used that get into our food source and is deleterious to our health. So this is another area that we need to be cautious about. And while we are able in some cases, at least initially, to grow more crops because we've used a pesticide, for example, or a herbicide, in the long run, is it what we should be doing? And I think bearing out now that maybe this isn't such a great idea after all, because it's harming our health more than we think.
But getting the word out seems to be the challenge here, because even though there are some scientific studies that tend to support the points of view that we've just elucidated here, they tend to get squelched in the mainstream and by the big bucks, the big chemical companies. How do we make the case, I guess? We're trying to do it here on Broken Road this morning, but what else is going on? I know Creation Moments works more in the spiritual and theological realm. Is there anything that Creation Moments is doing with respect to this?
Well, I mean, you know, posting my blogs, for example, on some of these topics that we've talked about, mm-hmm. And obviously, posting blogs or making links with your station and with your mm-hmm. Radio program can help. We talked about Mercola several
been
times
on his website a number of times. Yeah. But you know what I've noticed about those blogs is they tend to attract the attention of people that already agree with them.
Well, that's right, because they're searching for more and more information, mm-hmm. and it's not getting out to the general public. And until there's a massive lawsuit, a class action suit against these some of these companies, it's not going to get any attention. And even the best, class action suit will get some attention within, the legal realm. But as far as getting the public's attention or our mass media attention, that's a problem. It's been a problem.
I think David knows a lawyer. David?
Well, I just talked to a lawyer last night. I was playing cards with him. And, and he said... He said, would this be more free advice you're looking for? So that was the beginning of the conversation. Now, and that particular.
Now we've lost your mic there. Yeah, I presume you had a delightful game of whist in any event.
We did. We played a great game of whist, and it was very wistful. That was fun. No, we had a good time. I'm puzzled too as to how to get a message or any given message out. Mass communications has always been an interest to me, and I've worked in it for a number of years. But to say that I understand, how to deliver a message or how to get a message out, I don't think that's the case. I remember when I was my last radio station, we would spend weeks on a given message and it was something like maybe a new safety program or Amber Alerts and it wouldn't be much more than 15 minutes after I left the station, then the first, second, or third person I'd talk to would ask me, he said, "Well, Dave, anything new?" they hadn't heard it. They didn't hear the message.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have become so segmented as to what we listen to, and even if we listen to it, we're not really paying attention.
Hmm.
So I'm not sure. We're becoming less informed, but at the same time, information seems to be going to a smaller and smaller category.
It's like we're all exposed to more and more information more frequently. Maybe we're just overloaded, but we're not concerned necessarily about the things. We're all feeling maybe a little too secure over in this culture. We're comfortable for the most part. Our standard of living is miles beyond what most of the world experiences, and we figure we've got it pretty good, and just don't recognize all the threats are out there. And isn't that what happens to great civilizations of history? They just didn't feel threatened until all of a sudden their foundation was gone, and they disappeared. There's a whole bunch of us looking for stuff and not paying attention, not seeing the forest for the trees. Don, on this article, Dr. Crabtree is talking about a devolution, if you will, of the gene pool. And the author of the article, Michael Barrett, talking about threats and debilitations coming from fluoride and pesticides and genetically engineered foods and the like. Do you see those as causes of this decline in intelligence, or maybe symptoms of another problem? We've become susceptible to those things because we're no longer what we once were.
Right. I think it's interesting because let's just take the pesticides and the herbicides, for example. In order to create a pesticide or a herbicide, I mean, it takes intelligent work, for example, to do the research and to be able to say, well, I'm going to target this particular gene or this particular pathway in the pest or in the plant in order to shut the plant down or shut the insect, down, for example. And in that intellectual endeavor to try to create something that, can do us, benefit, the world around us is much, much more complex than even that. And so in our efforts to make our society better, for example, we have caused these injuries unsuspectedly, at first. I think, it just points to, how complex the world is around us, and perturbing one little system, maybe, or one little pathway in an insect has even major effects on us. And so the amount of studies that one would need to do in order to prove that a new product is safe in all regard is a Herculean test, at best. So here's man trying to use his intelligence to overcome some of the problems that he's seeing. and we're getting into trouble.
and we're less well equipped. If this is true, then we're less well equipped to deal with it the longer we go on. And that suggests that at some point, you know, a year from now or a millennia from now, we'll reach a point where we simply can't cope anymore.
That's right. And I think what we were talking about last week, trying to back to nature, if you will, trying to do farming in a simpler, not necessarily simpler, but in a way that doesn't use all of these chemicals. And even if we just grow food for ourselves and our families, we're far better off doing that than we are in using the stuff sometimes that are on our grocery store's shelves. So there also in this article it had mentioned high fructose corn syrup as another problem that's been studied in a number of areas. One is the obesity problem and that we have certainly in the United States, and high fructose corn syrup is blamed or pointed as a major factor in obesity, because our bodies just take it up and don't metabolize it as regular sugar, for example. But it also has the effect, as pointed out in this article as well, that it's causing our children to be dumber. And so we have these multiple effects from these products that we're producing. And high fructose corn syrup is a natural product. It's a highly processed product, obviously from corn, and it's mm-hmm. the sugar that's found in corn. Mm-hmm. But fructose is metabolized differently than glucose. Our bodies, our energy source is glucose for our bodies. And so fructose has to be first converted to glucose before it can be used. And that causes problems.
Well, I'm wondering where all this is going to lead. We just need to keep talking about it, I think. And it's apparent from reactions, listeners and people just searching for information on these issues. They come to our podcast here regularly. So I know there's widespread interest in this. Although, frankly, what we're hearing from are people that agree with our point of view. And we're not necessarily getting out and really beginning a dialogue. And I'm looking forward to the day when that happens, not necessarily confronting people on the air, but simply presenting a scientific approach, which will hopefully be received by the other side and dealt with. But again, there's so much corporate money. We talked about the campaign to label for genetically processed foods in California, defeated largely by Monsanto. And they bankrolled the opposition to that. And defeated it. Simple thing like labeling, food labeling. So there's a massive amount of opposition to this up there. And you wonder, in these corporations, where the personal responsibility is. And this is another whole topic that I kind of get worked up about now and then. We tend to blame organizations for things. You know, there's good corporations, bad corporations, good governments, bad. I'd say there was effective and ineffective governments and corporations and unions, but good or bad is a moral judgment, and that rests with individuals who make decisions for those corporations or those corporate entities. And at some point, those people have to take a look at what they're doing and decide for themselves whether it's good for people or bad for people, instead of good for the budget or bad for the budget.
Well, that's absolutely correct, but every listener, for example, has a responsibility. I think we, as a society as a whole, we've gotten away from taking responsibility for ourselves, and saying, well, I'm going to do the research on this. And with the internet, it is absolutely very easy mm-hmm. to do research these days to find out whether a product is safe or not safe. Now, some of the information is going to be buried, and you're going to have to do a little bit more digging, but the information is out there. And if people would just just do a little research, take responsibility for themselves. And don't just take even their doctor's recommendation as, okay, I got to do this because my doctor said it. do the research on yourself. Your health is your responsibility, not your doctor's, and not the the grocery store or the producers of food. It's your responsibility. Our government would like us to believe just the opposite, but that's one thing that I would say.
Well, it's an interesting article, and as we post this conversation in the audio archives, we'll include a link to the naturalsociety.com page, and you could actually just search for that article under naturalsociety.com and then look for lowering your IQ, for example, or Dr. Crabtree, or your search will find this particular article. It's interesting, and there are a lot of links there that will help you in following up, looking for more information on this. The other thing I would mention is that, consider the source. When you link someplace, and you read what they have to say, sometimes deciding whether or not they're credible and know what they're talking about. I mean, we had a reaction to our September show on the air in September 10th, I guess it was, where we talked about Bill Nye and his article about teaching evolution and throwing out creationism. And people were hot about taking him on personally. And we're not looking to beat up anybody here, although we don't mind a good discussion. Just consider the source, and I don't know how you evaluate, because there's thousands of places you can go for information. I'm wondering if there isn't just too much. It isn't too easy, is it? Can it be too easy?
Yeah, there is a lot of information out there. But before we close, I'd like to at least go to the Bible about this whole topic. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to Genesis. And as you recall, in Genesis 1, God created on the sixth day man, and he also created woman on the sixth day. But in Genesis 2, we learn that God gave man a job, and his first job was to name all the animals, for example. And so God paraded the animals in front of Adam, and he looked at the animal, he looked at their characteristic, and based on the characteristic, he gave them a name. And the whole purpose, I mean, one of the purposes of this was to show him that, gee, he doesn't have a partner, like all of the animals seem to have a partner, and I don't have a partner. And so it created within him a desire for a partner. And that's when Adam put him to sleep, and we know the rest of the story of how he created woman. I mentioned that only to say, because we were talking about cognitive abilities, Adam had to name all of the animals in less than a day, because Adam and Eve were created on the same day, as described in Genesis 1. And there were thousands and thousands and thousands of different kinds, of animals. That now, I don't know about you, but it's, I had difficulty naming my seven children.
But yeah, yeah.
And much less than...
and I thought I thought Diplodocus was a strange choice for you, too.
I would have trouble naming your seven children, too. I have no idea.
I don't know if I can remember them now, but anyway, no, I can if they're listening.
Now they're Sleepy and Doc and Sneezy
Snowy or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, I mean, it points back to the article from the point of view that, Adam and Eve being the first created humans here on Earth had tremendous cognitive ability that we do not have today. So from even a scriptural point of view, we can see that, we must be getting dumber. As time goes on.
Well, I suspect that Eve came along and made the first corrections in history. No, that's not a zebra, that's a platypus, Adam.
Yeah.
She was probably there because she would have remembered every word he said. So, she would have kept all the names straight from that point on, I'm sure. It's just the way it's turned out for us, Don. I can't help it.
Yeah, well, yeah, unfortunately, yeah, she got him in trouble, or he got himself in trouble by imitating what she was doing.
So. I think we couldn't have it better. I think the women have turned out to be excellent partners and kept us in line and probably added to our lifespan immeasurably.
And if you're listening, dear, I mean every word of this.
Yes, yes. Talking to Don Clark, biochemist and member of the board at creationmoments.com, and you can hear more from Don over at their website, creationmoments.com, which you can link to from our website at Broken Road Radio. And again, our conversation from this morning will be posted later today, along with a link to this article at the Natural Society newsletter, naturalsociety.com. Don, thanks so very much. It's always a delight, and we'll talk to you in a week or so.
Okay, it's been a pleasure being here again this morning, and y'all have a great rest of the week.
You do as well. Anthony Berger at the piano for us.